Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca, Mesut Özil. Buena llegada de Alexis, de nuevo el centro atrás para el segundo. Ha marcado y es justo Iwobi. El 2-0 para el Arsenal.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new Arscast Extra, as always with James from Gunnerblog. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you. How are you doing?
I'm well. How is your morning?
It's mixed, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
I was late for the podcast. I hold my hands up. So we're arriving with you slightly later than usual. And I was out last night drowning my sorrows after watching the Spurs game.
Yeah.
Attempting to forget it. Mm. Attempting to forget much of the season, to be honest.
Did it work?
Well, I don't remember much of yesterday, so that's some consolation.
But you remember the whole season, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, the rest of the season sort of stayed with me.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's put me in a fantastic mood this morning. I've got a clear head, a clear mind, and ready for some sharp analytical thought on the podcast.
Excellent. Well, I mean, I should reveal, of course, that we were scheduled to record at 10, and then you texted me last night going, can we make it 11? I'm anticipating a massive hangover.
Yes.
So,
and then it ended up being 11:30. It was even more massive than I'd anticipated.
Well, look, here we are. Here we are. And I think, you know, that's to be commended. We're here.
We're here. And how are you? Are you in the best of health?
I'm fine. Had a relatively quiet weekend. I didn't do anything to try and make myself forget what I'd seen over the course of the last couple of days. I just felt that was like a pointless exercise.
Mm.
I've seen too much. You know that dog?
Sad eyes.
No, the Cupcakes dog. You know that guy?
I don't know Cupcakes dog.
You haven't seen this? There's this a brilliant gif. I refuse to call them gifs.
Yeah, I'm looking for it now. Oh, yeah, he's looking. I have seen this dog. Yeah.
All right, so that's kind of where I am in terms of this season and, you know, what I've seen.
I'm just harrowed, like, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen too much, way too much. But apart from that, I'm okay. I had a relatively quiet weekend, so nothing is vexing me beyond the football. You know, I don't have any hangover or headache.
I would say
it is a lot to be going on with. It really is.
Yeah. So where to start, begin, commence?
That's a good question. I suppose the Everton game. No, the Everton game, the West Ham game.
I keep thinking
we could go back and just talk about the Everton game. That was quite good, 2-0 win. I enjoyed that.
I kind of think that West Ham are sort of the new Everton, aren't they? They're kind of the relatively attractive team who are knocking on the door of the Champions League. Everton are the new West Ham, sort of mid-table mediocrity.
Yeah.
Have switched around.
Yeah, it's all a bit weird. Actually, one of the things I noticed during the game on Saturday was quite how stoky the West Ham fans were.
Mm.
You know, there were a physical side. Andy Carroll, a bit late there on Koscielny, could have been a red card.
Mm.
And they took umbrage to this. They took umbrage to decisions going against them and got very stokey and, you know, the same old arsehole always cheating when one of our players gets his bollocks ripped, you know, from inside him. This is somehow an arsehole player's fault. But yeah, I thought that was quite interesting because, you know, West Ham fans, you expect better, do you? Or do we? Or should we?
I don't know. I mean, that's it for Upton Park, isn't it? Or the Berlin Ground, whatever it's called. They keep changing it. I don't understand. What's it really called?
It's called the Berlin Ground.
Right.
Yeah.
Like how Arsenal, Highbury was called Arsenal Stadium.
Yeah.
And that. So I won't miss it, I'll be honest. I mean, West Ham fans are tricky. I had a couple of texts off West Ham mates saying, your lot dive a lot and that kind of thing. But, you know, they fall over, yes. If you kick us, do we not bleed?
if you try and take the ankles off, just above the little ankle bone.
Do
thing
our
there.
Ankles not come off?
They do come off, because Koscielny was quite lucky. That was nasty, I thought, from Carroll.
Yeah, it was. Did you think it was a red card or a yellow card?
I thought that given the deliberateness of it and the fact that he took a couple of kicks at him from behind, it was really borderline for me. Really borderline.
One of those orange cards. One of those orange ones.
Yeah.
I think I could understand it being a yellow.
Yeah.
But I thought he was still lucky to stay on later in the game. He was swinging his elbows around like nobody's business.
Well, there was one that went into Gabriel's face.
Yes.
His beautiful face.
Yeah, what a shame.
but for that one, in fairness, you know, he wasn't looking at Gabriel. He was just jumping with his arms up. And those kind of clashes can happen from time to time. Not that I want to necessarily give him any benefit of the doubt or anything, but... Yeah, I don't know. Did we play naively or foolishly against a guy who is, let's face it, a bit temperamental and who was on a yellow card after 4 minutes? Could we not have been a bit more cynical?
Maybe.
Or is that not the gentlemanly thing to do?
I don't know. I don't know if Gabriel's much of a gentleman, usually. Usually he enjoys winding people up, doesn't he? He had a right go at doing the same to Costa and vice versa at Stamford Bridge. I think you might be right. Well, the thing that I thought was mentioned about Carroll is that Arsene Wenger came out after the game, said he really didn't expect him to play. And given West Ham's recent team selection, I suppose, you know, there is a certain logic to that. He's not been starting. But
yeah,
it was kind of, it was clear that West Ham, they spoke, in fact, Carroll spoke about it in his post-match interview, that they'd spent all week looking at Arsenal's weakness on crosses. And, you know, they picked their team accordingly, and it paid dividends.
I have to say that I'm pretty much appalled and outraged that such a thing could happen. that a manager in a football team could assess the opposition, find some weaknesses, highlight those weaknesses, practice on exploiting those weaknesses, and then put those very things into practice in an actual match situation. It's just not the right thing to do.
Well, precisely.
How dare they?
How dare they prepare accordingly for each opposition, according to their strengths and weaknesses?
Bastards.
I mean, I don't want to just lay straight into the manager 5 minutes into the podcast, but was that a bit naive on his part to think that Carroll wouldn't be involved? I mean, he's exactly the sort of player we really struggled to deal with.
I think we probably should have been perhaps aware that it was a possibility. Maybe they might look at this weakness in the other. Arsene Wenger admitted after the game, he talked about this, we've had this aerial weakness, because he was talking about the goalkeeper, and we'll come to that, I think, in a little while. But he was talking about the goalkeeping situation. Why didn't he play Cech rather than Ospina? And he said, well, look, we've had this problem in the air all season. It's got nothing to do with who's in goal. So if he was aware that they've had a problem all season, he must be aware that Slaven Bilic, as a modern manager who looks at the opposition, who does perhaps tailor his teams to various different games, might have used Andy Carroll in this particular one. I love this quote from Arsene Wenger afterwards. He was talking about Andy Carroll. He said, we should have made life a bit more difficult for him. On the first, second, and third goals, we were a bit naive defensively. I love that.
On the first, the second, and the third.
Just the three goals that we conceded. We were a little bit naive.
I've just gone on Arsenal.com to look at some other quotes, and the headline on Arsenal.com, it's just a picture of Arsene Wenger looking a bit sad and confused, and the big, bold headline just says, in the context, it's a bad result.
You don't say. Yeah.
Yeah.
In any context, it's a bad result, I think.
From the position that we're in, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, on paper, if you look at it absolutely with a complete distance and say, well, you know, a draw at West Ham, given they're fifth in the table and given they're playing well all season and they haven't lost at Upton Park, Bowling Ground, whatever the hell it's called, haven't lost there since August, you know, that's not a bad result. But when you're 2-0 up and 2 minutes away from half time, and you go 3-2 down within 5 minutes of the second half, that's a bad result for me. That is a bad result.
No, I mean, it is, you know, hugely frustrating when Arsene Wenger comes out afterwards and talks about the mental strength of the side for coming back into the game to get an equaliser. I mean, I suppose they deserve a modicum of credit for that, but collapsing at 2-2. It was extraordinary, wasn't it? 43 minutes, wasn't it, on the clock, something like that?
Yeah.
And all we had to do was get to half-time. And I was... I couldn't. I nearly laughed, to be honest, watching it. I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Hang on. No, you could believe what you were seeing. You could.
I could.
Let's not get into the realms of ridiculous here. You could definitely believe what you were seeing because we've seen it all right. Yeah, the first goal went in at 43:49, and the second goal went in at 46 minutes and 30 seconds. And for me, this highlighted a real big problem that we have in this team. We can come to the defensive issues in a couple of moments' time, and there are obviously things to talk about there. There were some Lauren Koscielny quotes, and we'll talk about those. But 2 minutes away from halftime, you're winning 2-0 away from home at a team that is good this season, that has been very strong at home, that you know is dangerous as well. So why not? And I know this is a fucking radical idea. Why not just be compact, sit off, defend the space as well, don't give them any room to attack you, close down men who are on the ball, don't allow crosses, just do the basics. Don't go flying forward looking for a third goal. Don't go flying all over the place looking to try and put the game out of sight. This is why I think we missed players like Petr Cech. Although his influence from the goalkeeping position might be a little difficult, but somebody like, for example, Per Mertesacker or Mikel Arteta, and I'm not talking about Arteta as a player, I'm just talking about as an experienced footballer who could talk to the players around him and say, hey, look, just be a bit sensible, play keep ball, don't give it away, don't do anything silly, let's just work hard, get into halftime, 2-0 up, and from there, you can then work on a plan for the second half. It was just bonkers.
But do you not think that there are players out there who should be able to assume that responsibility for themselves? I mean, guys like Ozil, who's won the World Cup, guys like Alexis, you know, Koscielny, France international. Do you not think that they should still be able to make those kind of strategic calls on the pitch?
They should be, but none of them strike me as those kind of players.
They should be, but they're not.
Yeah, they should be, but they're not. They do have the experience. And I also wonder whether or not we look at situations. I got an email, actually. I'm going to see if I can find it here very quickly. Okay. Yeah, from Alexander Akwerberu. I think I'm getting that very wrong. He's Alex A, anyway, and he says he's the only Arsenal fan from Togo. He says, no, really, I'm sure I'm the only one. And what he referenced was Jose Mourinho, in the sense that when you're in a certain position in a game, that, okay, here's what we do if we're 1-0 up, and here's what we do if we're 2-0 up, and here's what we do if we're 2-1 up. I do wonder if part of the reason why we're not good at managing those situations is because there's no instruction about what we do when we manage those situations. It's easy to say, look, do the sensible thing, but if it's not part of your training or part of your preparation, I do wonder if that sort of thing occurs to the players, or it should come more naturally, right? So if, you know, they're 2 minutes away from halftime, they're 2-0 up, okay, we've dealt with this. We've talked about this. This is what we should do in this situation. And I do wonder if that's something that's missing. And you talk
so
about
it has to be coached, basically.
To an extent. Yeah. And I think your point about the guys like Koscielny, like Ozil, like Alexis, like, you know, these guys who've been around the block and played plenty of big games and in big tournaments and all that kind of stuff, you're right. But you can't say that those qualities were there against West Ham. And we need those kind of qualities because in-game management, whether it's from the sideline or from players on the pitch, through leadership or whatever else, that's an important part of football as well. And I think that's something that we're missing.
Well, clearly. I mean, what happened at Upton Park shows you that. And while I think those players should be capable of that, I wouldn't contest the fact that they're not. I wouldn't contest the fact that they consistently demonstrate that they don't know how to manage a game. And I do think that you might be on something there. Maybe that is about it being sort of systematically bed into the side through coaching, through instruction, through having a clear plan of what to do in different situations rather than just relying upon moments of individual responsibility. Maybe there needs to be greater direction from the top. I mean, you know, it's really frustrating because I was watching that first 40 minutes. It wasn't a brilliant performance, but there were positives.
Oh, and yeah, then, yeah.
You know, Alex Iwobi in particular, two great assists. I thought Mohamed Elneny was looking very good in midfield, but then all of a sudden that rug is pulled away from you. And, you know, within sort of 10 minutes of football time, we're in a position where we're behind. I mean, it's staggering, really, if it wasn't so expected.
I wonder, you know, this whole thing about expected goals. There must be some analysis of Arsenal of expected fuck-ups.
It must be
really the easiest thing in football to predict. The statistical data analysis that goes with that must be just a piece of piss. Even I could probably do it.
Our XFU is through the roof.
XFU, brilliant. We got to get some T-shirts of that made. All right, well, look, before we look at the defending, let's talk about the couple of positives that we had. Goals from Mesut Ozil and from Alexis Sanchez and two assists from Alex Iwobi.
Yeah, and really good goals and really good assists as well. I mean, Iwobi is so impressive. What I noticed on quite a few occasions in this game was just his power, his upper body strength for a player of that age is really something. And, of course, the awareness, of course, that passing ability. He was great. And I think, I mean, maybe we'll come on to him because he's one of the wide players who Laurent Koscielny kind of called out in his post-match comments, you know, as regards to the defending. But... They were good goals and really good finishes from Ozil and Alexis, players who haven't necessarily found goals easy to come by of late.
Yeah, true. So there we are. We're like, put ourselves in this fantastic position and then it all goes. And then XFU to the max.
Shall we go through it goal by goal, shall we?
Yeah, let's do that.
Why not? Let's put ourselves through the ringer.
Yeah, why not? We're here to share the misery and maybe it'll be cathartic in the end. Who knows? But look, the first one, for all the positives that Iwobi had, people have pointed to him conceding possession for both the goals before halftime. He lost the ball, he gave a bad pass, and then he was sort of robbed in possession for the second one. Ideally, you don't want that to happen, but I do think there were other factors involved. It would be very harsh to pin the blame on him entirely. The first one, then, he loses the ball, West Ham spread it, and the ball comes to Cresswell on the left-hand side, who's got a great left foot, can cross the ball very well.
Yeah.
Nobody,
and it is a very good cross.
Yeah, it's a great cross, but nobody's anywhere near him. Nobody. And in the middle, Andy Carroll is standing on the edge of the box. He's watching, he's waiting. And Laurent Koscielny is standing, watching, waiting. He's not close to him. I mean, for me, as a what you want a centre-half to do there is be right on top of him and make it really difficult for him to make the run. Now, Carroll is so big and strong and powerful in the air that if he gets a run and jumps, you're fucked. There's no way around that. So what you do is you make it really difficult for him to run and jump. You stand in his way. You know, that? I mean, for me, that was just basic.
Does Carroll give him a problem by the fact that his starting position is so deep? So he comes sort of almost right to the edge of the box, and Koscielny probably doesn't want to follow him there? Is that fair? I don't know.
Maybe, but look, you've got one player, I think it was Antonio outside him, and Monreal is on him, and it's Monreal that ends up marking Carroll. Koscielny just stands there, and what you have is Gabriel standing as well. So you've got two centre-halves. I mean, what you could do is Koscielny goes to Carroll, tells Gabriel to cover, and you're set up for it. So it's not like you're overloaded. It's two West Ham players, three Arsenal defenders in the box, and on the edge of the box, there are two other, I guess it's, I think it could be Iwobi and Elneny on the edge of the box with one West Ham guy sort of there or thereabouts as well coming in. So I thought the defending was weak. I thought the fact that we didn't close the cross down was really weak as well. Koscielny said, you can't let them get a cross in easy because they've got good players on the wings. It's a job for everyone, not just the defenders. The guys on the flanks need to help their teammates with defending. That's quite pointed, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And this was, I mean, strategically, this was a really fascinating game because West Ham started with a back three and it gave them loads of problems defensively. We were finding space outside their centre-halves. We scored two goals in that fashion with players, you know, in the channels. But it did mean that they had kind of an overload, you know, when they went forward. We struggled to deal with their wing-backs. We didn't defend well against them. So we were trading these blows. And Koscielny sounds pretty hacked off. And what I suppose what's surprising about that is you look at our wide players, Iwobi and Alexis, they're players who typically we would consider ones who who do work hard for the team and do cover, particularly in the case of Alexis. So it's interesting that he's, you know, do you think his, I mean, it sounds like from what you're, from saying that Crest wasn't so much space, it sounds like you think he's got a point, Koscielny, there.
Yeah, of course. I think he's got a point.
But I mean, he's also accountable, right?
Yeah, of course. He's got his own part to play in the goal, for sure. But he's absolutely right. You know, that the best way to stop a player like Carroll causing you problems is to stop the crosses and to stop those at source. So you got to work hard to close down the men who are going to make those crosses. So he's absolutely right, but he's also got to take some responsibility himself, which, to be fair, and I should just give the rest of his cross, or the rest of his quote, a mention. He says on Carroll, he's quality when it comes to heading the ball. If you want to win the duel, you need to be stronger and arrive early on the cross. And my assumption here is that he's talking about attacking the ball as a defender rather than cutting it out at source, out in the flanks.
Well, there we go. I mean, that's something at least. But I do think it is frustrating. I mean, in some ways, I think the defending on the second goal was actually worse.
Yeah.
In my eyes, did you see it that way?
Well, yeah. What did you think of the decision to punch the corner?
I mean, I'm never a massive fan. When it's catchable, do you know what I mean? When you have that opportunity, especially right on half time, and you can sort of kill the game effectively for a few seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
That would have been lovely. Instead, it's kept in play. The players have to make a call about pushing up or not, which we're not good at the best of times. And there we go. I mean, when the ball fell to Carroll at the back post, he had far too much space for my liking.
Yeah, for sure. Like, we pushed out, but we didn't look around to see who was there behind us. Mm. It's ridiculous the amount of...
There may have been another player's... Like,
there were... Okay,
him.
There were... Four West Ham players behind four Arsenal defenders, all of whom are in like a line together. They're really close together. Carroll stays onside. It's number two who's behind. Let's see. I think it's a number two who's behind
That's
Carroll
Winston
as well.
Reed, I think.
Winston Reid. So if the ball comes back in, Winston Reid is absolutely clear at the back post as well. He's 100%. There isn't an Arsenal player within 7 or 8 yards of him, and he's onside. So the defending there was brutal, absolutely brutal. When it came to Carroll, were we slow to close him down? Did he get a bit of luck, do you think, when he miskicked it, rebounded back off Gabriel?
Yeah, maybe.
Could Gabriel have done better?
I can't remember, to be honest. I think he got a bit of luck, but then the way you dispatched it was quite impressive, even via deflection, you know.
Yeah.
I think, and bear in mind, in that first half, we could have well conceded another goal. Lanzini put one away.
Just before we scored, actually.
Yeah, where he was actually onside and called off. Mm. So the defending was pretty poor, to be honest.
Yeah.
As a unit, it was a mess.
Yeah, and this is where we'll talk about Ospina and Cech now? Because I think about that punch, and I think the point you make is really interesting because, okay, we've conceded a goal, not ideal, but not the end of the world, right? When you have a corner like that, if you've got a goalkeeper that comes out and claims that and takes that ball, it just takes the pressure off you.
Yeah. Do that thing where goalies do, where they fall on the floor and lie on the ball.
Absolutely.
For about 20 seconds.
Just kill some time. Get yourself organised again, if you've got anybody out there who can fucking organise a team in the first place. But, you know, that's where I think the benefit of Cech is. And what I said about Ospina after the game, people were thinking I was being critical of him. I wasn't critical of him because I don't think he had any chance with any of the goals. What I was critical of, or not necessarily critical of, the point I was making was that if you have a goalkeeper who can come and dominate the area, that it makes it more difficult for a player like Andy Carroll to have that kind of threat. That when the goalkeeper comes off his line and catches the ball and is big and strong, it's more difficult for the attacking team. Ospina is a goalkeeper, as we know, who likes to stay on his line. He doesn't really venture outside his six-yard box much at all. When he does come, he's not always terribly convincing. And I think maybe if Cech had come and saved that, you know, taken that. What did you think of the decision?
I was really surprised, really surprised.
Do you think the decision was made because Petr Cech is not 100% fit, or because he was just happy with how Ospina had played and wanted to keep a winning team?
I think that it was a decision made because he was happy with Ospina. I really do, because he had the opportunity in his post-match to say, Czech's not quite right. And I know that he was doing some work on his calf before the game, but I don't know. I mean, all the indications were that Czech would come back in. He's been on the bench for two matches. And we've seen Arsene do this kind of thing before. That's the thing. I wouldn't put it past him at all. I think that he didn't anticipate Carroll playing and thought that Ospina deserved to continue. I think he's probably got one in his head. He's worrying about keeping Ospina across the summer. He likes him as his number two and he wants to feel that there's a meritocracy in place and if you perform well, you stay in the side. But if that is the case, I find it so mental. I mean, do you think that or do you think Czech's not right?
Part of me wants to think that Czech isn't quite 100% yet.
Do you not think Arsene would have taken the opportunity to sort of say that? I mean, maybe he has and I've missed it, but...
No, I haven't heard him say that, and I'm not sure that he would actually say that.
Right.
To me, the only logical reason for keeping Czech on the bench is he's not 100% fit, but like you, my suspicion is that Czech could have played and that he picked Ospina because he wanted to... I don't know why. I don't know. He's done well. He's
nice because
okay.
He's a nice man.
He is a nice man.
Arsene Wenger's a nice man.
Mm.
And he didn't want to be horrible to David Ospina, who's performed really well. But Petr Cech is the clear number one at this club. He was bought specifically because of that.
Yeah.
He was bought to make a difference in games like yesterday. And I know that he made mistakes on the first day against West Ham. But really, has he made mistakes like that since then?
No.
Not that I can remember with any kind of regularity.
No.
And I agree with you that Ospina stood little chance with most of those goals. But I do wonder if the presence of Czech, his ability to come off the line, I wonder if the first time a cross was lofted into the penalty area in the match, if Czech had come, taken it, claimed it, held on to it, I just wonder if that would put that little seed of doubt in Carroll's mind, give West Ham that little pause for thought, not give them the confidence that they had, that every time they swung the ball into the box, Carroll would get there almost unimpeded.
Absolutely. That was my whole point about the goalkeeping selection decision. That was my entire point, is that I think it changes the way that the team defends. And it adds an extra bit of security and defensive solidity when you've got a goalkeeper who can do what Petr Cech does. Like, Ospina's a great shot stopper. He makes some good saves, even if he never seems to catch the ball at the first attempt when he makes
a
save.
Yeah, he did a good bit of sweeping as well.
Yeah.
Which, he's probably superior to Czech in that respect in terms of getting off his line quickly.
Yeah.
But that isn't the threat we were up against at West Ham.
Mm. And, of course, you don't make a halftime check. You don't take your goalkeeper off at halftime. It's just, you know, it's weird.
I do wonder if, you know, Arsene Wenger said he didn't expect Carroll to start at all, was what he said.
Yeah.
And I do wonder if when the team sheets came in, he looked at his selection and looked at Petr Cech and Per Mertesacker on the bench and had a, you know, a slight moment of, oh, maybe I've got this wrong. It would only be natural, I suppose.
So look, the third goal then, Monreal, which is unusual for him this season, got well and truly done by the right back, and the cross came in to the back post, where, of course, you want Hector Bellerin, all 5'9" of him, marking 6'4", 6'5", with his ponytail, with his terrible hair. Oh, he doesn't have that anymore, does he? He's got, like, terrible cornrows or something.
Has he? I mean, he's had
some Andy Carroll, not Bellerin,
Right.
So, yeah, that's the guy that you want marking Andy Carroll, isn't it, at the back post. Again, does that come down to organisational issues between the central defenders?
Maybe. I mean, maybe one of the central defenders should have gone with him. I mean, Carroll's probably being smart there. He's probably thinking, I'll pull onto this player who's a foot shorter than me rather than one of Gabriel Koscielny.
But you would, wouldn't you?
Of course. And I suppose it's not like in the days where we had Bakary Sagna at right back who would fancy his chances against anyone in the air. You know, Bellerin's not that sort of player necessarily. Mm. So I guess you'd hope that the centre halves would go, but I mean, I don't know. I can't remember. I haven't got the cross in front of me now. I don't think any goalkeeper would have plucked out that cross. It was quite lofted. Although David Ospina's positioning, I thought, was certainly interesting on the third goal.
Yeah, yeah.
His little party trick of being behind the line.
Yeah, I asked a question on Twitter about it, and some people, the answers, I was going, why does he do it? Because it's something he does quite often. And some people say it's because he's shit, and I don't buy that. Some people say it's because he wants to give himself more time to react. And I'm not sure I buy that either. I think it's a weird affectation that he has with his goalkeeping.
Well, I think he's so reticent to come off his line in those situations that he literally ends up sort of almost by the pattern of play being pushed a bit behind it.
Yeah, surely no goalkeeping coach is telling him stand behind the line. Surely, I mean, that can't be a real thing, right?
No. I mean, you want to narrow the angle as much as possible. You want to get out of the goal, right? So, I don't know. It's a curious coincidence, let's say, kindly, that his feet regularly seem to be in the goal.
Mm. I mean, there's a good case to be made that he would have saved that header had it not gone in off Gabriel's head.
Yes, true.
So I don't want to be like critical of him for that.
He has been good. I mean, yeah. I have been critical of him in the past, but I think this season, with the exception of that aberration at the start in the Champions League, in this run, while Cech's been out, I think he's really been very solid, very reliable.
Mm.
I still think that if Cech was fit, he 100% should have played.
Well, and I think he has to play the next game. Simple as that.
Yeah.
Unless there's some weird injury thing goes on between now and Sunday, but hopefully that's not the case. So look, 3-2 down then, shell-shocked, and Arsene Wenger brought on Aaron Ramsey for... Mm-hmm. Who did he bring on Ramsey for?
Coquelin.
And then he brought on Giroud for Elneny. So, I mean, we've a midfield partnership of Ramsey and Iwobi. And then he brought on Theo Walcott as well. All the forwards to try and get us a goal, and Lauren Koscielny was the man who got the equaliser.
He was, yeah. Tidy finish. He likes a goal, doesn't he, Lauren Koscielny, every now and then?
Yeah.
Beautiful assist off the shin of Danny Welbeck as well. lovely piece of miscontrol that paid off for us there. But yeah, we got the equaliser. And did you... At 3-3, there was still a fair... What minute was that?
20 minutes. Yeah, it was the 70th minute when we scored. So there was like 20 minutes plus injury time to get a winner.
Did you feel like we could ever? Did you feel like that was on the cards?
Well, you look at the players that we have on the pitch. Giroud, Walcott. Was it Welbeck came off for Walcott, wasn't
it? Welbeck came off.
Right.
Yeah.
So you've got Ramsey on the pitch. You've got Alexis. You've got Ozil. You've got Iwobi. There's plenty of goal threat there. I mean, the moment when it opened up for Alexis for a shot on his left foot and he cut back inside on his right.
Oh, that was infuriating, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't scream at the television very often because what is the point in screaming at inanimate objects, even though I know I've revealed on this podcast before, maybe the Arsecast regular, that I do shout at inanimate objects all the time.
Sure.
But the television, when a football match is on, but that was one, it was like, what the fuck? Just hit it with your left foot.
It opened up brilliantly. And then, I mean, he loves to cut inside, doesn't he, Alexis? That is his favourite thing to do.
Yeah.
So he wasn't going to resist the opportunity, but it was definitely there to be hit.
Oh.
That was irritating.
But, you know, when it came right down to it, did Adrian have to make any saves?
Not really. I can't think of any particularly big chances for either side, actually, in that last period. The problem was it was that classic thing where we'd thrown on so many attacking players that we didn't actually have great shape to our team anymore.
Yeah.
So it's probably quite difficult to exert any sustained pressure. Although I did think Iwobi did well, you know, in that deep lying role. You know, just considering his inexperience and being put in that position, I thought he did okay.
So look, overall, a very frustrating, disappointing point from the Upton Bowling Park ground.
What did we predict, Andrew? That's the question.
Well, here we go. I'm going to get the prediction thing. Prediction, what's it? It's on the wall here.
Yeah.
All right, so we got to do our predictions and then obviously the Spurs and Leicester games.
Mm.
So, the Arsenal predictions. Bum, bum, bum. Okay, I can't remember which... Was it just last week's game?
Yeah.
That we did. So hang on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Have we got 6 games left? We do.
Yeah.
We've got 6 games left. Okay, I better cross off the ones that we've already done. So, my prediction for this game was a draw.
Okay. You were correct. Well done.
I was correct. Your prediction was a loss.
So, we're up on the deal, guys, for me.
However, let's go to our predictions of Leicester and... Sunderland or Tottenham. We both predicted a win for Leicester.
Did
you got
we
that? Yeah. And we both predicted a win for Tottenham against Manchester United, I think. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No, actually. I'm a bit fucked here. because I can't remember how many
you
games
haven't written
done.
Down which game is which.
Yeah, I haven't. So how many games have Tottenham got left? Let me just see.
They've got...
How many left?
Five left.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3. Okay. Yeah, we both predicted wins for Tottenham against Manchester United, so we're both right in that regard. So I got all three right.
Congratulations. How does it feel?
Miserable.
Did you watch the Leicester and Spurs games?
I did. I watched the Leicester game. And, yeah, I mean, they just keep doing it. They just keep doing it. I'm on board now, you know. Yeah. I have to, because we can't win it. There's no way we can win it. So the only thing I can do now is hope that Leicester win it and Tottenham don't. That's it.
Please, God. Please let that happen.
As unpleasant as some of their characters are, you know, it's much better to have a racist striker win the league than Tottenham.
I wholeheartedly agree. What have Leicester and Tottenham got that we haven't got?
Organisation.
That's the main thing, isn't
it? That's the thing that just, the one word that just struck me. I mean, I don't want to talk well of Tottenham in any way, really, but they're good.
Yeah.
They're a good team and they're well organised, and you can see that in the way that they play. And Leicester, when you look at through that Leicester side, like look at the two centre-halves. People go on about Mertesacker, for example. Mertesacker's got no pace, blah, blah, blah. Well, fucking...
Knows Robert Huth, knows Wes Morgan.
I would put money on Mertesacker beating Robert Huth in a foot race.
Mm.
So pace is not the issue.
I'd like to see that, if anyone can organise that.
Yeah,
for me,
please.
I'd really enjoy it.
The two Germans. Yeah. You look through the side, you look at the players on an individual basis, and in terms of talent, individual quality, and all those kind of things, you would say that there are teams throughout this league that have more than Leicester. Much more. So what have they got that the others don't? They've got organisation, they've got spirit, they've got, you know, and those kind of things, spirit and will to win and desire are completely intangible. We can't measure them, but what we can do is look at how they play and the way they play and the way they manage games and the way that they stay organised defensively, the way that the midfield helps out the back four, the way that the strikers and the wide players help their fullbacks. And don't allow the dangerous situations to develop. I mean, essentially, Leicester have played a 4-4-2 most of the season, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, in this modern era of football, that's viewed as anachronistic in a certain way, that's not a formation that can be successful. Yet, here we are. They're top of the table, 5 games to go, and they look like they could win the league. There's a lot to be said for that. So that's where I would point to.
I mean, I don't think they've conceded a goal for 5 games, you know.
Mm.
4-1-0 wins, a 2-0 win at this weekend. It is amazing. I mean, no, I don't think anybody would argue that Wes Morgan's a better footballer than Laurent Koscielny. You know, I don't think anyone would suggest that Danny Simpson can hold a candle to Hector Bellerin. And yet, the sum of their parts is so much more efficient.
Mm.
It is frustrating, though, because, you know, you talk about teams with more talent, and Arsenal are undoubtedly one of those.
Yeah.
But they fall short in some of these slightly less tangible areas. I think, you know, I actually do think that Leicester play with a greater spirit, a greater sense of courage than Arsenal teams do. But I think that is hard to measure and that's hard to define.
Mm.
The organisation thing.
Leadership, as we talked about earlier.
Leadership's a big one, yeah. But I think, you know, motivation. But I think the organisation, the tactical elements, are things that can be implemented fairly practically.
Yeah.
And yet are not.
For sure. Even Arsene Wenger said something about it at the weekend, didn't he? He said something about leadership. Hang on. Let me see if I can find it. Bum, bum. Okay, hang on. No, he didn't. Maybe he didn't. Maybe I was just dreaming it. I thought he did.
Maybe. I mean, it's interesting. It's an age-old thing, isn't it? Arsenal need more leaders. But it does feel particularly true at the moment, you know.
Mm.
maybe it's because Arteta's been phased out of the team, because Mertesacker seems to not be in favour at the moment as opposed to Gabriel, because Cech, you know, can't get back into the side, Ospina's still in there, but we do seem to lack organisers on the pitch as well as off it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, look, there we go. That was the game. So, look, we've waffled on here quite a bit. Will we take a break and come back with questions?
Let's take a break and come back with questions.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arseblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arseblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arseblog. Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is part two, where we answer the questions that you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnerblog and at Arseblog, and of course on Facebook. I remembered to do a thing on Facebook today, so if you want to check it out, facebook.com/thearseblog. That's the official Arseblog page on there. So let's do it, James. Let's do the questions. You go first.
Oh, thank you very much. What an honour. You'd think I would have been prepared, but I wasn't. Okay, this... let's start with this one. This is from NJ Gooner. Two pseudonyms from New Jersey.
Okay.
Morris County. He says, why do people keep insisting the season is over when in fact it isn't? Is our fan base just a bunch of quitters?
Well, technically speaking, the season is not over because we still have six games to go. So on that point, he is absolutely right. It's not over, and anyone who insists that it's over is wrong. But is it over when it comes to having a successful season in terms of winning trophies? Yes.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
I'm over it. Nearly.
I don't think it's the fans being a bunch of quitters. I think it's people being realistic about a situation where you have six games to go and you're 13 points behind the leaders. That's not being a quitter. that's doing the math.
I mean, everybody knows the jig is up, I think.
The jig is up. I like it.
The jig is up. I think Leicester need... They've got five games left. Mm-hmm. If they win two of them, they will definitely finish above us.
Mm.
So there's and that's if we win all our games, which I still would not bet on.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet on that either because, of course, the XFU says that.
Well, with our XFU numbers this high, guys, we'll be lucky to win any games. So, it is over. In a way, it's weird this bit of the season now, I think, now that we are sort of out of it. I mean, we are all Leicester fans, aren't we, for the next few weeks?
Gotta be. You've got to be, because the alternative is just unthinkable. Unthinkable.
Don't be quitters, fans. I want you to stay interested in the season and put all your positive energy behind Leicester.
Yeah.
It has to happen.
Yeah.
It'll be a victory for all football.
So I'm not a quitter. I have to say, you know, if there's even the vaguest, slimmest hope, as ludicrous as it is, there's a part of me that goes, because I don't know how to explain this. When I grew up as a kid and I thought about Arsenal, I thought that they could do anything. I thought that they could win anything. And I grew up in the 70s when Liverpool won everything and Arsenal won fuck all. You know, we got the 1979 FA Cup final. Then you had the whole 80s thing. But I still had this belief in Arsenal as an institution doing or being capable of doing anything or winning anything or doing things the right way. That I can't shake that. As ludicrous as it is.
Despite all the evidence.
Despite all the evidence and despite me knowing better, there's just this part of me that goes, well, it's only 13 points. And if they, you know, but I know, I'm not being a quitter. I'm just being realistic here that the season is not over from a technical point of view, but from the chances of winning the Premier League, they're well and truly gone at this point.
But what? Well, no. The Premier League's gone. The Premier League's definitely gone.
All right. I thought you were going to tell me that there was a chance, a miracle chance, something had happened.
Can't see it.
No.
But if we win our game in hand...
What? Go on. No, sorry.
If we win our game in hand, we will be just 3 points behind Spurs. Mm-hmm. And surely it's something to play for still, to not allow them to finish above us. Because it's been so long now.
Mm.
You know, it'll be horrible. It'll be horrible to not celebrate St. Totteringham's Day like every other year.
Yeah.
Again, it doesn't feel massively likely. I mean, they're much more informed than us, it would seem, at present.
Mm.
But that is a gap that we could reel in, conceivably.
Yeah.
So I think that's really, I mean, with the league gone, you know, that's got to be the focus.
That's where our season comes down to. All right. This one comes from Knut or Knut. I don't know how you pronounce that. Knut or Knut Moland. He's at Knutsen or Knutsen 1.
Okay.
And he wants to know, is it time to try out the Chambers-Koscielny partnership at central defence? What do you reckon?
What, just as some sort of, you know, central defender roulette? Let's just give everyone a go.
Well, I guess based on the fact that, well, Gabriel and Koscielny was exposed against West Ham. The manager has decided also that Mertesacker and Koscielny isn't his thing right at this moment in time. So should we not try something else?
I mean, I would be more inclined to, if I was going to change it, if I was Arsene, I'd probably be more inclined with this stage of the season to bring in Mertesacker back alongside Koscielny than have a go with Chambers. But I mean, if the season plays out in this way over the next couple of games and we genuinely are left with nothing to play for, then we probably ought to have a look at Chambers at centre-back. Mm. While there's still something at stake, even if it is just finishing above our local rivals, I'd probably be more inclined to go with the experienced guy and a partnership that has at least worked and functioned before very effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not forget. But, I mean, maybe... I think centre-half's an area that we're going to have to address. I mean, I'm going to throw in another question now. It's from Matt Beck, at MattBeck27. He says, in January, I asked about your thoughts on Gabriel's first year. Do you remember that? We were talking about Gabriel back in January.
No.
No, okay. Well, I said I thought he'd been really good.
Right.
And you were a bit more cautious. So.
Okay.
And then he says, can we now say he's just Squillacci with a tough upbringing?
That's very interesting. Squillacci with a tough upbringing. Look, I don't think he's been quite that bad, but I don't think he's developed in the way that we would have liked. That there are issues with his defending. I mean, he's a tidy footballer. He's good on the ball. He's quick. He's not as strong as he should be. Did you see him get bounced by Payet at one point in the second half? He went like, I'm going in here. And Payet literally just, you know, I know those kind of short, squat guys are, you can bounce off them, but if you're big and strong enough already. Did you see the quotes from Matt Spiro?
Oh, from Squillacci. I actually didn't see them. Have you got them?
I don't have the quotes per se.
No.
But Matt is a journalist based in France, and he said, I had a couple of tweets here. He's at Matt Spiro, and he said, I had an interesting chat with Squillaci about the difficulties of being a centre-back in a Wenger team. He knows a thing about that too, too often exposed. Campbell, Toure, Keown, Adams, etc. good enough to cope. Koscielny just about too, but not many others are. And then there was a lot of tweets obviously going, well, Squillaci is shit, he's a terrible player, blah, blah, blah. And Matt's point was, for those slating him, okay, but he won trophies with Monaco, Lyon, Sevilla. I think he won a European trophy, didn't he, with Sevilla? Mm-hmm. Played in the World Cup and a Champions League final. Arsenal was his only failure. So it's quite interesting, isn't it, to look at the litany of centre-halves who've come and gone and not been successful at Arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, when Squillaci arrived, he had a certain pedigree, you know.
I thought he was... For the time that was in it, and for the way the club was, and we had, I think, we still had Giroud at that time, mm-hmm. and Giroud was. Do you remember that period when Giroud looked like the greatest centre half ever? And we went through this long period.
New SIE,
whenever he played, we won. He was cool, calm, collected on the ball, and then it all went to shit. But whatever. And Koscielny had just signed. And then you look at a player like Squillaci coming in, who was, what, maybe 29, 30 at the time. All this European experience. He was playing for Sevilla, who were playing Champions League football. He'd been with Monaco. He'd done all these, played at the World Cup, etc., etc. On paper, that was a guy who really should have fit the bill. And it just went terribly, terribly wrong. And perhaps it's the inability to cope with the pressure of being a defender in Arsene Wenger's teams, that the defenders, we go through these periods, don't we, where we go, fucking hell, our defence is being exposed time and time again, and something will happen where we have one of these amazing games where Walcott tracks back and does all the defending and helps his fullback out, and the defensive midfielder shuttles across and cuts out the runs, and they don't get the crosses in, and they go, this is the blueprint for Arsenal to play football. If the team works together, we can all be magnificent and fantastic. We can defend well, we can do all these things, and it's like after a few games we go, we'll just kind of carry on and do what we normally do, and all of a sudden the defence is left exposed time and time again. And I think that's a really good point, is that the defence is so often exposed that guys look like worse defenders than they actually are. Because they're just being fucking relentlessly battered in games and relentlessly being left without any help or protection from the midfield. It's why Coquelin, when he came in, people went, whoa, fuck, this is brilliant. Like, all of a sudden, there isn't a great big gap right down the centre of our midfield.
Yeah. Yeah,
and so
I think you're right.
So these issues that our defenders face, you can point to the quality of some of the defenders, and I don't think you can excuse all of it. But you can look at the way that teams are allowed play against our defenders, and I think the best defenders around would struggle, given some of the things our guys have had to contend with over the years.
Yeah, I mean, drop a Morgan or a Huth into the Arsenal team, I'm sure they'd look a mess. Drop even a Vertonghen or an Alderweireld in, I don't think they'd look half the player they do at Spurs. And I think that is because of the system and the support around them. We always are searching for individuals, and already people are talking about, well, this summer we need to buy a certain kind of centre-half who can partner Koscielny and can offer this and offer that. And I think that's probably true. However, I also think that if the structural issues in the team aren't fixed, then they're still going to be exposed. However much money you spend on them.
Absolutely, absolutely. Organisation, James.
Organisation.
Mm.
Well, listen, I mean, I'm just doing all the questions today. I hope you don't mind.
No, not at all.
But Guna DS asks, is the defensive weakness due to players or training method? And if it's the latter, how much responsibility should Steve Bould take? Remember Steve Bould? Steve Bould, and he came in and there was all that chat about, you know, he's going to help the defence out, and we had a decent run with him.
Yeah.
You know, it's all gone quiet, hasn't it?
Has a bit, but then I don't know. It's difficult to make any real assessment because we don't know how much work he is doing on the training ground.
Don't know about the delineation responsibility, do we?
Absolutely. As we know, Arsene Wenger likes to take all the training sessions. Mm-hmm. He decides what happens and when it happens. And while I don't buy into the theory that we don't do any defensive training. I do feel like we could probably do more based on what we're seeing. So I don't know. I don't know. It's very difficult, isn't it? There was a great picture during the week. Did you see it? Of Steve Bould and Arsene Wenger on the training ground. Steve Bould is saying something. Steve Bould is saying something to Arsene Wenger, and Wenger's got his arms out like, "What? What are you saying?" This is quite a good
say
picture.
What?
Say what? Right. I'm going to see if I can find it here while we're talking. But it's difficult to know what Steve Bould is doing. What you would say is, in general, that our defensive coaching leaves something to be desired. And again, it comes back to defending not just being the realm of defenders, that the team do have a responsibility. Everybody in the team has a responsibility. Oh, here's the picture. I'm gonna send it to you now. Will I send it on this thing in here, in the chat thing?
Yeah.
Where the fuck is it gone?
Bottom right.
Bottom right. Oh, there it is. Little chatty doodah. I'll put a link to this on the blog post if someone wants to go and check it out.
Oh, yeah. God. Arsene looks like he's sort of going up to Steve Bould saying, "And what? Yeah. And what, mate? Bring it."
Yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah.
What do you mean, organisation?
Yeah.
What do you mean, stopping crosses? What do you mean, attacking the ball? What do you mean, heading it away?
Yeah.
What are these? You're just going to confuse them.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I was just thinking about our team, and I was thinking about Leicester. I'm thinking about Leicester a lot at the moment, but you know, their strategy for the second half of the season, at least, has basically been be organised, be compact, defend, and rely that your creative players, your likes of Mahrez, and your clinical attackers, the likes of Vardy, will get the job done at the other end. And do you not think that in people like Ozil and Alexis, say, Arsenal have the attacking talent to be able to do that, to be able to get the one goal needed? What they maybe need is a coach or a strategy that just protects the other end, because the attacking quality is there inherent in the side. Arsenal have the ability to hurt a team. They just don't necessarily have the ability to protect themselves.
No, they've got the ability to hurt themselves by the way that we defend. Yeah, I mean, it's a great point.
You don't need to control a game to win it, you know, necessarily. If you can defend, then jobs are good.
Eight times we've conceded three goals or more this season in all competitions.
That's a lot of times.
That's too many times, isn't it?
Yeah. It's too many times. And when you look at the fact that you look at the league table and you look at the side that are top have lost three games in the league this season, we've already lost seven.
Yeah.
Very nearly eight yesterday. I mean, even in the last couple of weeks when there has been more of a mathematical probability of us winning the league, it's never really felt like we were champions or in the making, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It feels like something is kind of missing from the dressing room, doesn't it? And that's why Sean Carey, at Sean Carey 8, wants to know, would you consider bringing in John Sitton next season just for the halftime team talks?
It would be tempting, especially if we could get one of those cameras in the dressing room, you know?
Well, here, for people who don't know, John Sitton was the manager of Leighton Orient, and they did a fly-on-the-wall documentary. And his team talks
were... If there was a fly on the wall, the fly has flown away in sheer terror.
All right, but I had to listen back to some of them before we recorded while I was waiting for you after your, you know, delay.
Sure.
I had a bit of time to kill, so I went and listened back to a couple of them. And this, if you can imagine the Arsenal dressing room at halftime on Saturday, I think this fits in very well. I'm going to play it for you now. Hang on.
Okay.
What did I say about good players? They want to be good players all the time. Don't you know how profound that is? Have you not examined the fucking words? Because you've had two good performances and you think, I'm fucking Bertie Big Bollocks tonight. I'll fucking play how I like. But you won't play your like, because if you play your like, I'll fucking stick with you
too. Many Bertie Big Bollocks.
So you, your little cunt, when I tell you to do something, and you, your fucking big cunt, when I tell you to do something, do it. And if you come back at me, we'll have a fucking right sort out here. All right? And you can pair up if you
Management's
like.
It's easy, really.
And you can
when
fucking
you know
pick
that.
Someone else to help you, and you can bring your fucking dinner. Because by the time I'm finished with you, you'll fucking need it.
You fucking need it. You're going to bring your fucking dinner.
See, look. Get rid of Steve Bould, bring him in as the assistant. Surely that'll sort everything out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Bertie Big Bollocks. You play two good games and you think you're Bertie Big Bollocks. Well, that's it's uncanny.
That's exactly what happened to us, really, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that Bertie Big Bollocks thing, there is something in that. That sense of, we've won two games, we're back again, we're Arsenal, we're a Champions League team.
We're 2-0 up, aren't we great?
We're coasting, and we went to West Ham and we didn't show them due respect, really. And we paid for it. Have you any questions? I mean, I feel like I've done loads of them now.
Okay. I think I've got some.
Come on.
All right, just give me a second. Jesus.
No,
stop pressure.
Get them. I'm hungry for questions.
And here's a good one. If Michael Owen, this comes from Gooner John, at
it's
Mr. John Friend.
Yeah.
If Michael Owen and Danny Mills were drowning and you only had one life jacket, what's your favourite cheese?
I like a Shropshire Blue.
Oh, you like blue cheese, do you?
Yeah.
I'm not mad into it.
What do you like? Baby Bell?
Mini Baby Bell. Fuck
yeah,
Mini
I like
Baby
a
Bell.
Mini Baby Bell.
I like mozzarella. Not the big blocks of mozzarella, but the mozzarella di bufala or buffalo mozzarella, whatever.
Little ball type things.
Yeah, but I remember when I worked in this place in Spain, we had a lot of Italians work there too. And one day, this guy came back from Italy. He'd been home to visit Mama and the whole lot. And he came back with a piece of buffalo mozzarella. It was about the size of your head. It was fucking outstanding.
Right.
In one of those plastic things, and it had the water in it that it sits in, you know, to keep it all fresh and stuff. And basically, people were just going in and out all day taking bits of this this mozzarella. It was absolutely great. But I'm not a big fan of the blue cheese.
I can understand that. I mean, effectively, it's moldy food, but it is delicious.
I watched a very interesting program about that recently.
About moldy food?
Yeah. It's on Netflix. It's called Cooked by Michael Pollan. And he did this book called The Omnivore's Dilemma. And he's done this program on Netflix called Cooked. And it's fire, earth, water, and air. And one of the things that he talks about is, you know, making bread and using fermentation and beer and how, you know, the way they do those crazy things where they, like, bury dead shark.
Yeah, eat that. Like fermented fish. Yeah.
That's a bit what blue cheese is like for me. Fermented dead shark. I just can't, doesn't work for me.
Can't get on board. I can understand that, to be fair. I just like mouldy food. So,
right.
You know, I just leave mine in the cupboard until it's green and then I think it's delicious. Well, speaking of taste, this is a good question, I thought. This is from Tapio Ranta at Hopeful Gunner. Is he still hopeful? Who knows?
Don't know.
And he asks, you've had an accident and your taste buds have been transferred to your hands or to your feet. Choose one.
I would have to say hands.
Same.
Because on my feet, I'm going to be wearing socks pretty much all the time. Socks and shoes.
Right.
And I don't want to taste my socks and shoes. Now, I wear clean socks.
Show off.
Yeah, I know. That's what comes with age. It's the wisdom of age, learning to wear clean socks.
I look forward to owning my second pair of socks and finally being able to do that.
So if you were to taste socks and shoes all the time, that'd be pretty grim. And also, if you went barefoot, what are you tasting? Concrete. When do you go barefoot? When you walk on the beach?
Sand. No one wants to eat sand.
No one wants to eat sand, and no one wants to taste like dog piss because dogs piss on the sand and birds shit on the sand, and it's all very salty. Be just too salty, you'd be thirsty all the time. However, with hands, you could wear gloves from a day to day. You could wear surgical gloves so you don't taste anything, and then you walk along and you walk into someone's kitchen and they've got a big bowl of chili there. You just take the gloves off and go blah, 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 and put your hands
in
the
chili. Burn yourself though.
Yeah, you'd have to let it cool down a little bit, but yeah, you could just like splodge your hands onto things. You just walk into a restaurant. This is how you taste food. Walk into a restaurant and just randomly go splat, 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 splat onto people's plates. Ooh, that steak Diane was delicious. Ooh, that spaghetti carbonara was delicious. Sorry about your dinner, folks, but I had to taste something. That'd be it. So hands for me.
But shaking hands with people on introduction would be
gloves
with difficulty. Gloves. Always
gloves. Yep.
Very good. I mean, I'm almost mindful of the fact that you have been offered this situation before. You're so astute in your interpretation of it.
Hey.
I mean, I think you've actually got this bang on.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so. All right, I've got one final question. This comes from one of our pals on Facebook, which is James Stewart Wild. And he said, if you had the choice of having one of the following superpowers, which would you have and who would you use it on? One, the power to make someone happy. Or two, the power to make someone unhappy.
Oh. Today, I'd probably... I don't know. There are lots of temptations. Mm. I mean, the happiness on myself would be quite nice.
No, you can't use it on yourself.
Oh, I can't use it on myself.
No.
The unhappiness... my mate Jack, who's a West Ham fan,
right.
He was giving me quite a lot of stick over the weekend. I'd quite like something bad to befall him.
Fuck
today.
You, Jack.
Yeah, Jack. He's in a McCoy's advert at the moment where he eats a crisp and makes a weird noise. Keep an eye out for him.
All right.
Every time that McCoy's advert comes on telly, swear at your telly and say, fuck you, Jack.
Fuck you. I'm never buying McCoy's again.
Yeah. I mean, if McCoy's want to send me any free crisps, that is fine.
That's fine.
So I think Jack, the West Ham fan, I'd make him really unhappy. It's his turn.
Right.
What about you?
Well, I think there's far too much negativity in the world. And
here we go.
I'd prefer to make someone happy than make someone unhappy. Now, that's not to say that there isn't, you know, obviously a part of my brain that is thinking Mourinho, John Terry, Phil Collins,
Andy Carroll,
a dolphin. Yeah. Oh, yeah, by the way, thanks for the fucking, how many? 9 dolphin emojis in a text last night. That was...
It was like a red rag to a bull. I know how much you hate dolphins.
Fucking bastard dolphins.
Let's just start tweeting Arseblog dolphin emojis and see if he finally cracks under the pressure.
Listen, Twitter is on the brink of a downfall and now you've just absolutely fucked it.
I've pushed it over the edge.
Yeah, I'm just going to get dolphin emojis all day long. Who would I like to make happy? I'd just like to make Arsenal fans happy.
Aww.
By
world peace,
by making Tottenham and Leicester unhappy.
There we go.
Because they get a points deduction for fielding ineligible players and just being annoyingly consistent over the course of a season. There should be an FA rule introduced outlawing organization in any form. And those two teams have displayed that overtly. In fact, you would go so far as to say that they've been quite smug about it.
I would say they're very pleased with themselves, but, you know, when this new law comes in, they'll rue the day they tactically planned something.
Yeah, exactly. Motherfuckers like Slaven Bilic and his whatever he did. What did he do again that I've forgotten? Oh, yeah. He set up his team to expose our weaknesses.
Oh, he's got a nerve. Well,
outrageous.
He'll be sorry.
It is just outrageous.
A final bit of good news. Arsenal have just tweeted that Mathieu Debuchy returned from injury to help Bordeaux keep a clean sheet. So that'll raise spirits. Good to see Bordeaux defending well with our players. And the first reply to the tweet from Captain Morocco has just said in all capital letters, no one cares.
Well, Captain Morocco, I think he summed it up there quite well.
He has indeed. Let's give the final word to Captain Morocco.
I did like the worst superhero. I did like the other Arsenal tweet about how Nacho Monreal nearly scored against West Ham.
Yeah.
That was a good one. I mean, that wouldn't wind people up at all, would it?
No, not ideal. Anyway,
we'll go and see if Captain Morocco can save the day. Maybe he's the hero we've all been waiting for. Batman versus Superman versus Captain Morocco. It's the next big movie, guys.
Oh, God.
All right. Okay.
Let's go forget about all this.
Yes, let's. Are you going out to get drunk again?
Yeah, why not? It's Monday. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll
start again.
I'll prepare myself for the Dolphin Avalanche.
Yeah.
We'll chat to you on Friday ahead of the Crystal Palace game on Sunday, and we'll be here next Monday to figure out the XFU on that.
Yeah. Looking forward to it. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.